This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When you have a vehicle that actually can run on electricity, and you have a technology that can harness solar energy and convert it to electricity, customers can now produce their own fuel.
If you own an electric vehicle and you have solar panels on your house, you can drive around powered entirely by renewable energy. But what can EV owners who don't have solar on their homes do to make sure they're as green as can be? Mike Tinsky and his colleagues at Ford Motor Company are trying to tackle that problem head on. Ford's promising new C-Max solar energy concept car has solar panels built right into the roof. Today on Sea Change Radio, I talk with Tinsky about how magnification technology, borrowed from 19th century lighthouses, could be a key to making solar cars a practical reality, how Ford culture has changed in the last decade to embrace efficiency and ecological innovation, as well as the ins and outs of flex fuel technology. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Mike Tinsky. He's the Director of Vehicle Electrification at Ford Motor Company. Mike, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So Ford has a new concept car out called the C-Max Solar Energy Concept, which is using solar panels. You already have different C-Max models out, but is this the first one using solar energy?
Yeah, that's right. So we have two models of the C-Max in production. One's called the C-Max Hybrid, and the other's called the C-Max Energy, with the difference being the energy product actually plugs into the wall and uses electricity for a lot of the transportation from the grid. And what we have and what we've introduced is what we call the C-Max Solar Energy Concept. And it's really harnessing the power of the sun and using that to recharge the batteries on board so that you can actually drive off the energy that's provided by sun.
And I guess the solar concept is different than what like the Nissan Leaf and Toyota Prius offer in terms of their solars, because those are just powering auxiliary systems of the vehicle. This is actually powering the vehicle itself and recharging the battery. Is that accurate?
That's right. I mean, solar's really come a long way. Some of the other offerings that we may have seen in the past has really been to cool the cabin or to do other, as you said, ancillary features on the vehicle. What we really tried to do is we worked with our partner, which is a company out of California called SunPower, and we used their very efficient solar cells on top of our vehicle, and we were able to get about 1/8 of the battery charged every day just by using solar on top of the vehicle. But we weren't, this is where the innovation comes in. We really wanted to push the envelope there. So we focused on using a new innovative infrastructure concept so that we could actually recharge the whole battery each and every day using the sun.
And is that the Fresnel lens, this concentrator?
Yeah, that's right. So think of it as a magnifying glass for you know the simplest way, and it's borrowing a technology that goes back well over 100 years that they used to use in lighthouses, and as the vehicle is underneath this Fresnel lens or the magnifying glass, it concentrates the energy on top of the vehicle on top of that of those solar panels. And it allows us to get a full 8 kilowatt hours of charge each every day.
And does it recharge while it's driving and parked, or does it have to be in a special place to charge up from the sun?
It'll always charge the battery, but to get a full charge, it needs to be parked under the infrastructure, the magnifying glass, to get the full power. But even if you're out driving around or you're parked in a somewhere at home or at a spot where the Fresnel lens isn't available, it's still capturing that energy and putting it into the battery.
Oh, so the Fresnel lens is a separate thing. It's like a little car park or something. Is that right? It's an awning almost.
Yeah, exactly. Think of it as very much like a carport with that's a clear Fresnel lens that you park underneath, and it's basically just concentrating that energy on top of the vehicle.
And how big is that? Is that something that you could fold up and put in your car for a long trip, or is this something that's it's a fairly involved structure?
It is. It's about the size of a parking space. So what we're envisioning is this really would make a lot of sense for those that are going to work or going somewhere for, you know, 8 hours or so. You would potentially have these installed at the workplace. And so you drive to work, you park underneath the concentrator, and when you're done with work, you essentially have a full charge to drive home on electricity.
In Ford's vision of this, are these going to be things that companies are going to buy for their employees, or is this something that's just included in the price of the car?
Well, it is a concept, but we're really thinking that it would be the former. But there's, I think there's also other applications. For example, there's many places in the world where the grid is not as reliable as it is here in the U.S. And in those cases, they could buy a standalone concentrator and never have to plug their vehicle because they would use the energy from the sun. So there's applications such as workplace. That makes a lot of sense here in the United States. But in other parts of the world, I think it makes sense where there's no grid or where the grid is unreliable.
So I understand it's a concept car, but can you explain the difference between the capability of the solar charging with the Fresnel lens and without?
Right. So it's in its simplest form, the concentrator is an 8-time multiplier. So without the concentrator, you're getting the energy of the sun. You're getting a few miles of driving, say 4 or 5 miles of driving without the concentrator. With the parking under the concentrator, you're getting a full charge of the battery, which is 21 miles, as our sticker says, using the concentrator. So it's the difference between 3 or 4 or 5 miles versus 21 miles on using electricity. So as long as the sun is shining on the vehicle and you're in the sun most of the day, you would get that 1 kilowatt hour or that 3 or 4 miles of driving from electricity. If you take that same car and park underneath the infrastructure, you get the 8x multiplier, so you get 8 kilowatt hours of charge, and that gives you 21 miles of electric driving. So it's functional under all scenarios. It's just that amplifier or that concentrator really gives the ability for that battery to receive a full charge.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Mike Tinsky. He's the director of vehicle electrification for Ford. So, Mike, this is kind of two questions in one. What kind of variation do you see in terms of geography? If somebody is using this car, let's say, in North Dakota versus Florida, what kind of variation would that be in terms of charging time? And I guess you were talking about the 8 kilowatts that it would use, that it could charge under the concentrator, but about how much time would that theoretically take?
So the 8 kilowatt hours, which is a full charge on our C-Max energy, that would take, we chose an average city from in terms of sunlight, or what we call a radiance. And that happens to be South Carolina. That's the average. It's one of the states that receives the average amount of sunlight. So if we took the concept to say to a state where I live, like Michigan, instead of taking 6 or 7 hours to under the concentrator may have to be a little bit larger, and we would probably be talking about 7 or 8 hours. However, we take that same scenario and go to Phoenix, we're likely to see a smaller concentrator and only needing 4 or 5 hours to recharge. So that's the part of the project where we're at today, is really to understand what the concentrator will look like at different parts of our country.
And can you contrast that, Mike, with how long a standard charge would take from somebody's rooftop solar array?
So home solar systems essentially take the power of the sun and either use it for the home, or they put it, any excess, back on the grid. So when you're charging your vehicle at home, it's either drawing that power from the solar or from the grid itself, depending on if the sun's shining or not. So think of the grid in a home solar system. Think of the grid as a big battery, and you're charging from that battery, especially if you're charging at night. That energy is coming from the grid, even though you put energy back on it during the day. So the times don't vary with the solar system on your home. It's essentially whatever the capacity is of your charge station and the vehicle combination. So, for example, our C-Max Energy, if you were to charge it using a standard wall plug, the standard 120-volt plug, it'll take about 7.5 hours to recharge. If you charge it with a high-powered charge station that you have installed in your garage, it'll take about 2.5 hours to replenish that battery. So it's less about how much solar you have on your roof, and it's more about the capacity of the charge station you use in your garage.
Now, I know this is a concept car and people can't run out and buy one yet, and you probably can't list the suggested retail price, but can you give us a basic idea of the range that Ford intends to sell the car? And also, I'm curious about if somebody wanted to buy the concentrator.
Yeah, well, we really haven't gotten to that that point yet, Alex, but I can tell you this. We're really excited about the economic benefits the customers are going to have. So if we take 8 kilowatt hours that you could get with the concentrator and with having the solar on the vehicle, and you calculate how much that's worth, it's typically worth about $1.50 to $2 per day in electricity. So multiply that times 365 days, and you could talk about a $700 a year if you charged it and use that energy every day of solar energy. And you couple that with what we've really been seeing in the market, especially on the solar market, is prices have really come down while efficiencies have really gone up. So we're seeing this unique point where solar is starting to make a lot of sense on top of vehicles. And actually, solar is looking more and more positive to put on a lot of things, whether it's the home of your roof, vehicles like we're talking about here, or even other horizontal surfaces. So we're getting to that point, what some people call grid parity, which means that the cost of installing solar is getting to be either better or equal to the cost of what you pay for electricity off the grid.
So is this just the tip of the iceberg in terms of using solar energy in vehicles, Mike?
I do think that we're going to see solar in many more products, many more different services, including the automotive industry. I do think we're going to see that. We continue to see the trend of increasing sales and electrification. You may know that about 3.5% of all sales now are electrified products. That's an industry number. That number continues to grow. And when you have a vehicle that actually can run on electricity, and you have a technology that can harness solar energy and convert it to electricity, the logic only makes sense that customers can now produce their own fuel. And by the way, that fuel happens to be green, and the cost of that that technology continues to go down. So when you add all these factors together, you start to see where customers could potentially have solar on their vehicles.
As I was motivating back in town, I saw a Cadillac sign say, "No money down." So I eased on my brakes and I pulled in the drive, gunned my motor twice, then I walked inside. The dealer came to me, said, "Trade in your Ford and I'll put you in a car that'll eat up the road. Just tell me what you want and then sign that line, and I'll have it brought down to you in an hour's time. I'm gonna get me a car and I'll be headed on down the road."
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Mike Tinsky. He's the Director of Vehicle Electrification for Ford. So, Mike, the director of vehicle electrification, that's not a title that you would have heard bandied about the halls of the Ford Motor Company a decade ago, I imagine. Can you explain how one becomes the director of vehicle electrification and how things have changed in the time you've been in at Ford? How do you study for something like this?
Well, it's great. You know, it's a great question. And I think, you know, as people progress in any of their careers, you end up gravitating to where not only your skills match, but also your passions align. And that, I think I've found that position, at least where I'm at Ford. And yeah, I think the question's a good one. There has been a lot of change. Alternative fuels in general have been a growing space. We've been seeing growth in compressed natural gas, clearly electrification, and you know now we're looking at hydrogen for some of our next generation products, meaning fuel cells. And with all of that growth, and with the whole industry looking at fuels that aren't necessarily petroleum based, there's a lot of growth, and I think there's a lot of interest. People are starting to see that these technologies can be affordable and drive cleaner. We're seeing it across the board in electrification, not just in the automotive space, but you can see it in two-wheeled transportation. You can even see the electrification phenomenon happening and lawn equipment and many other things that we used to use petroleum for can now be powered by electricity or on the grid. So that's we recognized that early on. I've been in this position about 4 years, and it's a great ability to make change within the company and offer products that our customers want.
So you said you've been in this position at Ford for 4 years. Have you been at Ford longer?
Yeah, I have, and it's not typical, but I started actually at Ford when I was in high school, so there was a competition to see if you could come up with a new idea, and I wrote a paper, and the award for the best paper was an internship at age of 16.
What year was that?
That was 85.
So you're a Ford lifer.
I'm a Ford lifer. In fact, we'll even go even further, and that my father worked there, my grandmother, and my great grandfather. So there's lineage there for four generations, and I continue to carry the torch.
You also saw quite a transformation, I imagine, internally at Ford as the late 90s and early 2000s came about, and you just saw the American automakers continue to double down on these large gas-guzzling SUVs and other similar cars. It seems like Ford has gotten its wake-up call and has realized that that's not necessarily what consumers are as interested in anymore. Can you speak to how that cultural sea change occurred?
Yeah, there was. I mean, clearly there was a change. It can be it can be proven just by the number of Focus we sell versus say Explorers and Expeditions. We really have seen a shift, a marked shift, and especially in America, for people to drive smaller vehicles. A lot of that was a result of gas prices. But we also have seen a permanent shift there. And then in terms of our larger vehicles, which you know we still offer, those are leadership fuel economy leadership vehicles. So we really recognize that even though there clearly is going to be a segment of people that are going to be buying F-150s, one of the best-selling vehicles, but we recognized that segment needs to dominate and fuel leadership because people need to get work done. People need to move things around. There's large families. So vehicles like the F-150 we've recently announced is going to be an all-aluminum alloy. And when you look at those kind of technologies, those are big bets, and it's a big change for us to change not only our whole plant, but also all of the service and all the tooling associated with repairing the products. And all of that is going to lead to some fantastic fuel economy numbers. So I've been seeing a shift. It started, long time ago. Fuel prices now have settled in the mid-$3 mark. We are expecting that to continue to increase over time at a pace faster than inflation. And because of that, we really think that we need to continue to push the envelope in terms of fuel economy across all segments.
This is from a couple years ago, and Bloomberg quote, "Public charging stations for electric autos outnumber outlets for alternative motor fuels by almost 2-1, even though there are hundreds of times more flex fuel vehicles than plug-in cars on U.S. roads." Explain what the flex fuel vehicle issue is. Is this something real, or is this a marketing term? We see it on lots and lots of these cars, and they always have a little... They use the color green very effectively on those little metallic badges. What does that mean, and is this something that consumers should be considering when they're looking for a vehicle?
So alt fuel, especially when you're talking about that, in terms of the badging, generally is referring to ethanol content in the fuel. And what we have in today's pumps is up to 15% ethanol. And if you're not familiar with ethanol, it's essentially generally a corn-derived product or a bio-derived product that could be grown and added to fuel, petroleum-based fuel. So you have a mix of crude oil that's been pulled out of the ground, but also mixing it with a renewable type of grown product that gives you the ethanol mix. When you see that badging, it generally means that you can actually refuel the vehicle with a higher percent of ethanol over the 15%. And so it's a bit corrosive. So when you see that badging, all of the fuel lines, the fuel tank, and the engine has been tested and developed to be able to handle the higher percentage of ethanol that's in that fuel.
Isn't that almost any new car these days, though?
No, it's a good mix of our vehicles, and in fact, a mix of industry vehicles. The challenge is really around the pump price. So ethanol is not as energy dense as the petroleum based fuel, and so when you have a higher percentage of ethanol, you're actually going to get a lower miles per gallon. And if you do that, you'll see that it's not that fantastic of a deal relative to the miles per gallon you're getting to the premium you're paying relative to the pump price. And that's the struggle we have. It's a pretty long conversation because it involves government subsidies and even having pump availability across the U.S. has been a big challenge. But going back to your quote that you mentioned earlier, it's comparing it to public charging of electrification. And what we're seeing is a tremendous growth in terms of electricity and the ability to charge in public places. And just recently, we've surpassed the 23,000th installation of public chargers across the U.S. So that's the number that's being compared in the quote. We are seeing an increase in using public charging. And as charging gets faster and faster, meaning the batteries can get replenished faster, we're seeing that can really improve electrification because people then feel more comfortable because they don't have to wait for several hours at a charge station. It can only be 15 or 20 minutes, and then they can recharge and get on their way.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Mike Tinsky. He's the director of vehicle electrification for Ford. So we're talking about the source that's charging these batteries, but we really haven't looked at the innovations that are occurring on the battery side. When we put these two variables together, if you can kind of look into the future 5 years or so, Mike, and give us a vision of what you see in terms of efficiency and range.
Yeah, that's a great question. So on, in terms of batteries, you know, we've seen a lot of improvement. If you recall, back before the recession, we you know, we didn't have any battery manufacturing in the United States, and we were shipping a lot of the lithium ion batteries from Asia here to the States, and that these batteries are quite large. They, you know, in general, they're about 500 pounds for the for a full electric vehicle or even more. And so the Recovery Act really helped that. It set up 3, 4, even more manufacturing facilities in the United States. It took the price per kilowatt, which is the cost that a battery, that would, as you know, batteries are very expensive. It took it from, at the time, it was about $1,000 per kilowatt hour. So to give you some idea what that means, our Focus Electric, so that's 100% electric vehicle, has a 23 kilowatt hour battery. So that battery at that time was $23,000. So what we've seen since then is we've seen prices drop to about $650 and even heading down from there per kilowatt hour. The goal and what many people have been striving for is to get to around $250 per kilowatt hour. And those numbers have been quoted as being achievable in many publications, and it's really about getting the right scale and getting the plants up and running. And so that, that battery now becomes much more viable. And electrification, therefore, makes much more viable. And we can put bigger batteries in our product. So where today you get up to 100 miles range on a full electric, maybe that number could double or go 50% higher. And then you start to see the charging infrastructure going to higher power. And we're going to see this natural improvement over time that the batteries get better, the infrastructure gets better. And so, you know, our thoughts are that we're really going to start to see electrification hit a knee and a curve here in a few, probably in a few years, where people can't tell the difference between a gas and electric and actually would probably prefer an electric because you can refuel it at home and it does have some great driving characteristics.
So one of the issues that we discuss a lot on Sea Change Radio is this ever-evolving grid. How do you see this changing grid affecting the way people make their auto-buying decisions, Mike?
Well, one of the key changes we're seeing is the way electric companies or electric utilities are charging for electricity. So we're seeing what we call time-of-use rates propagate across the United States. And what that means is that where a customer in the old model would essentially pay one price for electricity no matter when they used it, they're now charging a different price based on the time that that customer used it. So it's more typically is more expensive during the day and less expensive electricity at night. And what we really have harnessed is that, well, that would be, that's a fantastic feature for people that drive electrification because you're typically sleeping at night and a vehicle can typically be recharged at night. So this trend that we're seeing in the utility space is really driving the cost of electrification cost down because people are able to enjoy these very low nighttime rates to charge their vehicle. And we handle all that automatically through technology in terms of the times of when it starts and stops charging. And it's really taken the cost of driving an electric vehicle from, say, a quarter of the cost of driving a gasoline to even and down to an eighth of a cost. So it's a much more economical transportation with this change.
The car is the C-Max solar energy concept from Ford. He is Mike Tinsky, the director of vehicle electrification for Ford. Mike, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jimmy McGriff, Chuck Berry, and Ziggy Marley. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidioedu.org. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.